2076 podcast. Now connecting.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the 276 podcast. I am your host, a voice in your ear. I really need to come up with something better. Well, you know what, you can call me Ramotude and go to my Twitter at Ramotude, R-A-M-O-T-U-D-E, which of course is terrible marketing on my part, but it's the only Twitter I have. And we'll use that for now. That's good. 276 podcast. I don't know, just Google it. 2076 podcast. Anyway, we're done with that. On to what we're talking about today. I'm just going to be talking about some of the stuff I've been doing for work. So I have a full-time job as basically, I'm kind of like a utility player, but I do a lot of machine learning stuff. And I was creating these GANs, which you might not know what they are. They're, if you've ever heard of like neural networks, colloquially referred to as AI by society, which is a terribly over-exaggerated name for them. But they're just these neural networks that can generate, in this case, images. And there's a project I'm helping with where they need a bunch of images of people that don't exist that look photorealistic though. And they need these people in to have multiple expressions or poses. So the GAN or the neural network can't just be generating like randomly different faces. Anyway, it's a mildly interesting technical problem, which, you know, I figured out and did, which just as an aside, made me today question it because this always happens at work. It's really not a great incentive structure there, where it's sort of the more things you slay, the more you take care of for them, the more they just heap on your plate. There's no upward incentive as a competent independent contributor, because there's some person who's put in charge of, say, managing you, and their only job is to try to generate more work for you, but they're not under, you know, terribly harsh incentive structures themselves. So I just, you know, ignore them and they sort of forget what they said within a week. It's really weird. I was always surprised when I went to work at companies how lackadaisical and non-hard-edged most places are. The same thing when I, you know, like went to academics, a lot of places. Like I came out of my youth hard charging, assuming I had to, you know, I don't know, come up with like an E equals MC squared level breakthrough, and you know, and I don't know, but the real life is the opposite. You know, it's just a lot of people just trying to slide under the radar and get by. That was a rabbit trail, but so yeah, it's a little annoying because the reason I brought it up is because they had looked at an independent company, like actually a startup company that was offering to do this as a service, which means they have an entire group of people, right? I mean, at the very minimum, like 10 people to make up that particular size company, including at least a couple engineers and stuff. And I'm, you know, they didn't like their offerings, so then they came to me, and in my free time on the side, I'm supposed to create something that was better than what that company was trying to offer. And this actually comes up a lot, which is, you know, and then the obvious next thought from like people who are, say, in the startup world or ingest a lot of that startup propaganda garbage: oh, just start up a company yourself then. You know, if you're creating these services that people really need, or companies really need, just start it up yourself. And it's a lot more complicated than that, obviously. I mean, the amount, the producing a service that's useful is a single digit percentage part of the whole problem. You know, being able to find people and talk them into using your service, all that, all the social networking stuff, all the glue of networking between humans that make society and everything else and services work, is, to me, always seems to be the vast majority of the obstacles and the problems and the effort to get anything done. So, yeah, I think you can chase your tail, you know, say like I created a neural network that's particularly useful. I could chase my tail for the next year, year and a half, you know, what, like registering a website, registering a C Corp, trying to, you know, market it, trying to improve it on the side. I've done this before, and my perception is nobody cares, you know, because often these companies that are making these decisions or purchasing these services or something like that aren't motivated at the core by the quality of what they're getting. They're motivated by a whole myriad of other influences, you know, like the convenience of sort of the recommendation in their network. I mean, not to get exhaustive on this, but my point is that you might make really good lemonade, right? And you go in this neighborhood and there's this, you know, the little, say, it's one of the neighbor's daughters, say Susie, and she's selling lemonade, and yours is not only cheaper, it's higher quality, it's better, right? Yet everyone's going to go to her lemonade stand and buy it, and you don't understand why. And it's like, well, there's a lot more at play there. I mean, there's social dynamics. Like, I live in the neighborhood. I want Susie's parents, you know, I want to have a good relationship with them because maybe I have a kid or whatever. And it's really no big deal for me to pay four or five times for the same cup of lemonade from her lemonade stand because, you know, it's still like less than a dollar or something. You know, so she has some overpriced, really badly balanced sugar water for like, I don't know, 80 cents. And I managed to create some, you know, Michelin star restaurant lemonade for like 10 cents a cup or something like that. That doesn't get you anywhere. That's not enough to destroy the market, take over. But that's what they always sell on these, on the startup / business propaganda, because there's a lot of virtue positioning. There's a lot of, you know, it's a little like a church, the whole church of entrepreneurship, the church of services and business making. It gets sold as 100% meritocracy, as 100% pure progress into the future and betterment of humanity. And, you know, once you start using those more sort of ridiculous general terms, I think most people start getting more skeptical, or maybe not. I don't know. Silicon Valley is a good show. You should watch that if you haven't. But there's themes of that in that show. My point being that, you know, I've done a fair number of DoD contracts. And I never got anything very large or anything. I always felt actually like I got pretty ripped off. Like I did a ton of work and got very little money. But, you know, it's something I just always wanted to do. You know, I always wanted to work with DARPA and these agencies because I read a lot about them as a kid, and I'm very much disillusioned with them now at this point in my life. But there is a whole ecosystem of program managers that will work at DARPA, you know, run some programs, and, you know, they, after about 4 years, your tenure is done at DARPA as a program manager, and then they will leave, go into the industry, and they'll know how all the contract systems work. So they'll go work for a really small, medium, crappy company in the middle of the country somewhere that's not producing anything of quality at all, but because they know how the contracting system works, they can eventually plug into that. And they start getting these contracts, which is not being particularly managed with any vigilance or anything, because it's just public money, you know. And at every level, there's just an administrator making a six-figure salary, lazily managing a bunch of these things, and they don't really care. So, I was always surprised that I remember creating one time a really good not to get into it too much, but essentially a neural network that processed very kind of exotic types of information for DARPA. And honestly, in retrospect, I realized they were more interested in the PowerPoint presentation I gave to them, and the way I explained things and the way I tied it to like implications of technology and society. They were almost purchasing my PowerPoint slides rather than the technology, because then the program manager took those slides and then put it into a bigger stack with other projects that they were working on. And then they could go around and impress their boss, who's like the deputy director or the director then directly, and or, you know, other people, which in a lot of the ways, I think they're all in this mindset of they have 4 years to network and find themselves the next job. So there's very little emphasis being placed on like what I was selling them or what I ultimately produced for them. Did it actually work? Was it actually any quality? What was the comparable? Was it actually better? They really liked or paid most of the attention to the slides I produced. And, you know, at some point in my slides, I made those points, but there's no really checking if that was true or not. So, you know, this is sort of a ongoing theme of mine, and I apologize because I don't feel as negative as I do these days as maybe I sound or as I used to in the past about the fact that when you're younger you get tricked and you're more say genuine and you're more tricked by the simpler narratives and you really throw your guts into stuff to making them better. And that's really not what what mobilizes a lot of things in society. I mean, what moved that along was the idea of the way it was being sold and wrapped and packaged in these, again, PowerPoint slides I sort of thrown together to try to excitedly make my point of why this was cool. And that was the end of it. That was the cul-de-sac of their sort of potential exploration of it. They weren't interested in getting into the details of what I did or why what I was doing was working or whether it was working. They really couldn't care. And I remember getting on these meetings with them and they could not get themselves to pay attention. They're just like, yeah. You know, it's just another meeting. And they, which was, you know, maybe it was a little, it's definitely naive of me. I mean, it's a little bit almost schoolboy to think you're going to go in and the teacher is going to check or care, you know, how good of a job you did or something. But so that's like another point of view on it. But anyway, my point is like the whole meritocracy and progress angle of things is, in my view, largely not the point of attention. So like when I work at these companies, going back to that, and I'm consulting and stuff like that, you know, if they knew somebody there, you know, if there was more, I don't know, spices in the pot, there was more get for them. You know, they weren't just getting this service. They were, I don't know, there was the people who work at this company thought that company was up and coming, and maybe by purchasing this, they might have future interactions. They'll have like 3-4 follow-up meetings with them using company money to purchase the service, whether or not it's good, which means potentially down the road, they will have these networks for future jobs for themselves selfishly, right? That's like an example of how the incentives of people within the organization are actually motivating these aggregate decisions. So I was not meaning to talk about this today, but I guess I realized, because I really want to talk about neural networks and stuff like that. And I don't want to talk about, I think a lot of that stuff's insanely boring. I don't watch any podcast or YouTube videos or anything like that on neural networks. I find, like for instance, Lex Friedman, anytime he has a guest on that's talking about that stuff, I don't watch it. I don't watch like 95% of his stuff, but I just, it's interesting because one of the first, you know, one of the worries is this neural network that I found architected by, I think, the Microsoft research group, you know, doesn't, somebody pointed out in the company I'm helping that it doesn't output many black faces. And I kind of went back and checked and had it output like 1,000 faces and you know, just to see if our sampling was bad or something like that. And it really doesn't. And that's undoubtedly because of the training set of data that they used was skewed a certain way. And this gets in the whole, everyone, you know, this has been, you know, you should stay away from mainstream news, but I get the headlines sometimes on my phone and I just refuse to click on them. All those people being fired from Google and stuff like that who are there as racial warriors for in the arena of neural networks, which is just insanity to me, because that might be one of many things that should be balanced out. I don't know why that get. We could talk about why exactly that is, like why that gets an emphasis. If there's a convenience, there's a clickbaiting element to that. There's it grabs titles. It just, you know, pisses people off across the board, regardless of their technological knowledge. I understand that, and it's a good, like, reductive example that kind of grabs some people emotionally. But that's a technical problem. That's what that is. That's not a systemic. It's a technical problem. I mean, they've inputted a training data set that isn't generalized or broad enough, and that could be from a lot of reasons, because these training sets are hard to generate. So, you know, they might have aggregated some, say, university training sets, and then they have to go and manually clean them up and stuff like that. There's still a ton of work, because you have to input, like, say, 50,000 images to get a training set. So you can't just go on Google Image and just pull down any 50,000 images. They have to be, have a certain size. They have to maybe be looking at the camera. There's a lot of things. And if they're looking in different directions, you have to somehow mark that in the data, and then you have to make sure all the different directions are balanced in terms of numbers. So you have 10,000 looking this way, 10,000 looking this way, on and on and on. There's the training data is one of the most expensive parts, and it's what's causing the issue. And so nobody is generating these training sets completely on their own. They're just aggregating them from other sources and still having to do a bunch of work. I mean, I think that's clear. Hopefully that was clear. And so, first of all, I have no way to fix this. Like, they were telling me, I'm like, yeah, well then that's what you have. I mean, we can, you know, you can look for other networks that are pre-trained, but this one fit a bunch of insane criteria they needed. They needed certain image quality, which, as you get better and better image quality, it gets harder and harder. Partly for the reason that we just went through. Anyway, it doesn't matter. And I'm like, I have no ability to now. I mean, even like Google DeepMind doesn't collect their own training data, which is insane, because they're a $1 billion a year operation. And so, I don't know. I just think that it, I don't know if it gets communicated as clearly to the public that it's not a problem of not hiring enough, you know, like hiring too many white people or anything like that. I mean, so you have a bunch of like autistic white male engineers, you know, you're not representing neurotypical people enough. Like, that's not the problem. Like, it's the pictures of the people that are being input. So if I don't see any Down syndrome representation in the, there's a million categories you can produce. And if you want that included, you have to include it in the training set. And it's not the engineers that are doing that. I guess that's all I was trying to say. So that's kind of what I've been working on. And, because I have a full-time job, and then I kind of try to do all this other stuff on the side just to keep myself sane. Speaking of which, I saw a tiniest uptick on my analytics. So that was nice. I appreciate it. I should probably say that in the beginning, but I really don't know what else to say about that. I just I've been, you know, I've worked in a very isolated way a lot of parts of my life. You know, I for instance, when I was in residency, I was living alone, working 80 to 100 hours a week, and I remember I used to listen to casts of video games, and I remember these people I'd listen to. I couldn't even see their face. I would just see them, and they weren't even particularly good at casting the game, but there was something about listening to them that really was chill and relaxed me and stuff like that. So I don't know if that's what I am for some people. I don't know if there's an informational value, if there's a entertainment value. I don't know, and maybe I shouldn't pick at it too much. But thank you. I guess what I usually do is the 276 scenario, and I can do that with neural networks very easily because that's definitely a futuristic technology that lends itself to the a scenario in, what is that now exactly? Wow, math, 55 years from now, 276. Yeah, so I think it's because we've kind of talked about the training, the inputs problem. The inputs drive the network, if that makes any sense. I mean, you know, they, as you can imagine, like if you grew up in a neighborhood with a certain demographic distribution, and this is before we had such insane amounts of media too, because now you can kind of go on to YouTube and see videos of people and stuff like that. But your brain, in essential, is you know, in a way, is a neural network that then, you know, gets a certain coverage of the potential space out there. And what I mean is just that it, you know, it sees a certain kind of I mean, if you literally grew up in old people homes, you would see a lot of old people, and you'd probably be able to discriminate among old people, that is, distinguish between differences in them. I mean, because the word discriminate is kind of like a charged word, but in math and statistics and machine learning, it just means to be able to classify two or more things in different categories, you know, accurately. And so, you know, that's like an example where if you grew up around a bunch of old people, you would be doing that. So you would have a sort of a neural network, your brain being trained on that, mostly old people. My point being, so let's do the 276 scenario. Yeah. So I imagine in the future, what's happening is, you know, how, cops are, which is probably a good thing, getting, I mean, I'm sure they have their complaints against it, but are getting the, body cams. So there's like cameras mounted to their body somewhere. There's even on their cars. So I imagine this more ubiquitous, camera world in 55 years. And so that you know, it's like the Google glasses that we're trying to, they try to popularize, and it totally crashed and burned. This was when I was in school. So this was like, almost 8 years ago, I guess. I remember going to parties and seeing some people trying to wear those in San Francisco. Mostly really lame old people trying to be cool. Anyway, that was my experience with it. But they had these glasses you could wear that had a little camera sticking out, and you know, in theory, it was like almost like wearing a smartphone. And you could you had a screen that only one of your eyeballs could see and stuff like that. So stuff like that, this mounted camera technology capturing your environment around you. You know, there's such unlimited, basically memory space, cloud storage, ability to transmit video and stuff that, and then such a miniaturization of technology and electronics that, these things are more, ubiquitous and easy to sort of, put everywhere. And, you know, other than the obvious privacy concerns, and you know, that's interesting because, you know, I know China, for instance, has a lot of facial recognition technology within cameras and stuff like that. And I'm sure, I mean, of course the United States does, it just doesn't get the media coverage in this country. One other consequence of that is that the particular experiences you have, you know, it's sort of seen this first person view of you going through life. You can have your own personal neural network ingesting all these images, and so that when it's asked to, say, generate new images, it's, you know, like any neural network, it's generating these averages or mixtures of things it's already seen, so that you are walking around with a personalized neural network, which is different than my personalized neural network. And And then, you know, we can extend that one step further in this, in the 276 scenario, which is these neural networks can say interact and stuff like that. And so if it's ingesting more than just images, it's ingesting ideas or concepts or points of view even, or anything like that, you get in this level and space of where, you know, my neural network is arguing with your neural network and you and I don't even have to argue. So that was kind of a thing, a concept I had touched on at some, I don't know, like 10 episodes ago or something. I remember vaguely making the joke about nobody has to argue on the internet anymore. You know, we have Twitter bots that do it for us. But this is kind of getting into this, tacking it from the other different angle. In that it's personalized, it's being trained based on the information from your life. Anyway, I probably have to get back to working on this neural network for work, which is kind of silly. You know, the fake work, fake business, it just sort of really feels like sometimes. So I don't know, maybe you're at fake work, maybe you're doing some fake school right now and listening to this. I appreciate it. Again, go to wherever you're listening to this. I mean, you've already found this, so I guess keep listening to there. You can go to patreon.com/276podcast, listen to them for free. You go to locals.com. Again, I have no idea if anyone's ever going to use that, but I'll probably stop pitching that one in an episode or two. Thanks for listening, and have a good one. Later.
I'm afraid this is the final turn. It's over. I switch Lord of Dragon to defense mode. Then I activate the magic card, the Flute of Summoning Dragon.
This can mean only one thing.
I take it you're familiar with my strategy. As soon as my Lord of Dragons plays this flute, two more dragons will be summoned to the field.
You're planning to call forth two more Blue Eyes White Dragons, aren't you?
That's precisely what I'm doing, Yugi.
Fight off three Blue Eyes.